ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Going to be an interesting morning this morning. Okay. Reading this morning from Canto 2, Chapter 7, Text number 5. Chapter heading is Scheduled Incarnations. Text 5 is about the four Kumaras. In the first canto, chapter 3, there's a list of incarnations. In canto 2, in chapter 7, there's a list of incarnations. The list of incarnations follows an answer given by Brahma to Narada about how he made the creation happen. And after he explains that very nicely, he then gives like an extra prize. He says, now I'd like to explain to you about the forms of the Lord as they appear within the creation that I created. He gave me everything, I did the creation. Then he appeared within that creation. And I'd like to describe that to you. That's how it's introduced. And then a whole chapter of list of incarnations, because that's one of the six questions asked in Canto 1, Chapter 1. Can you please describe the forms of the Lord as they appear within this world? So the answer is continuing. Sutta is describing how Brahma gave this answer to Narada. The verse reads, to create different planetary systems, I had to undergo austerities and penance, and the Lord, being thus pleased with me, incarnated in four sunas, parentheses, Sanaka, Sanat Kumara, Sanandana, and Sanatana. In the previous creation, the spiritual truth was devastated, but the four sunas explained it so nicely that the truth at once became clearly perceived by the sages. So the system is, the Vedas become manifest just like Krishna says at the beginning of creation. In Bhagavad Gita, he describes, in the beginning of creation, he sent forth generations of men and demigods, and with them the sacrifice embedded within the Vedas. And bless them by, be happy by the performance of yajna. So the principles and the procedures of yajna are within the Vedas. And they're preserved through the partial devastations, like Matsya Avatar preserved the Vedas. And so many descriptions of the Vedas are preserved. But in this reference here is, Brahma's telling Narada that one partial devastation, the knowledge was lost, and the four Kumaras established that again. Doesn't give detail, neither in the verse nor purport, but there's something in the third canto and there's something in the Skanda Purana that gives some further detail. Let's go through that a little bit. So we know that there are four sampradayas, four, according to Padma Purana, four Vaishnav sampradayas intact today. So we know the description very well of how the Brahma sampradaya began. Teni Brahma Hridaya Adikavaye Muyanti Asaraya. The personality of God has imparted that knowledge within the heart of Brahma. And then Brahma to Narada and Vyas and so forth. So that's how our sampradaya began from Brahma. How does the sampradaya begin from the Kumaras? That's what the subject here describes, that very similar to here, the personality of God is being pleased with the austerities and penances of Brahma, manifested through Brahma for Kumaras. But before that, the knowledge being lost, Brahma himself established four principles of knowledge. This is described in 3.12.4. The four principles of knowledge are Sankhya, Yoga, Tapas. Sankhya is analytical study of matter and spirit, and then based upon that analytical study, acting within the realm of spirit or on the side of spirit. And yoga is a process of meditation or mysticism by which one can go beyond the body and enter into the realm of spirit. And in that method, or that by that means, provide liberation for the soul. Tapa goes along with this process of knowledge. And vairagya, detachment. So Brahma taught those principles to the four Kumaras, and the four Kumaras then, through those principles, they realized the knowledge of the Vedas and presented the knowledge of the Vedas and established their sampradaya, known as the Kumara sampradaya, later known as the Nimbarka sampradaya. Nimbarka sampradaya because Nimbarkacharya, like in our line, Madhvacharya, took the teachings that were previously existing and very systematically wrote them down and categorized them into a system of knowledge. They were prior existing knowledge, but Madhva categorized and systematized. So Nimbarkacharya did the same from the Kumara Sampradaya teachings. And to this day, there are very, very prominent Nimbarka teachers and temples, and they're very they particularly like Radha Krishna worship. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu established his teachings, he drew two teachings from each of the four sampradayas and put them. It's not like it was a composite of something already existing, but rather to Bhaktisiddhanta's teaching is that to bring unity within the diversity of the sampradayas, he brought something or prominently established something that they would strongly relate with for the purpose of bringing unity. So Radha Krishna worship was prominent, is prominent in the Dimbarka Sampradaya. And they very much appreciate Radha Krishna worship that we also do. There's that link. One time when we were doing prakrama in Vrindavan, we were at Ter Kadamba. Ter Kadamba is a Kadamba grove where Rupa Goswami had bhajan kutir, and it's the place near where Nanda Maharaj's goshal was. Nandagram is up on the hill, downhill, and heading in easterly direction towards where Radharani's home was and Yavat. Close to Nandagram, but in that direction. And there in Ter Kadamba, Rupa Goswami would do his bhajan. And he did a lot of writing of Nectar of Devotion and other things. It's a very, very transcendentally nice place. Very thick Kadamba grove off in the middle of a presently agricultural field. So we were with our prakrama group speaking about Rupa Goswami and Krishna Balaram. There's very beautiful Krishna Balaram deities. And some very transcendental pastimes took place there. Directly interactions with Radha and Krishna. So while we were there having this discussion, a whole group of Nimbarka followers came. Like a couple thousand. Into the grove, taking darshan of the deity. So we just had kirtan. And Krishna Smarana was there. We just had kirtan and kirtan. And it was such a nice kirtan. They stopped their parikrama. They stopped and sat and joined kirtan with us. There's a very nice mood of appreciation. And there are a number of places in Vrindavan where they have temples. And whenever we visit their temples, they receive us like family members. It's very nice. So, Nimbarka Sampradaya is part of the Kumara Sampradaya, or it is the Kumara Sampradaya. It can be known either way, just like our Sampradaya. Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. You can say Madhva Sampradaya, we can say Brahma Sampradaya, or Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. Our particular line is Lord Chaitanya in the line of Madhvacharya. So Kumara Sampradaya and Nimbarka Sampradaya, same thing. In Skanda Purana, there's reference to the Prabhupada comments about this, that Lord Hari descended in the form of a brahmachari, and he instructed the Kumaras. In that way, Lord Hari spoke to the Kumaras the knowledge of the Vedas, and then they passed on the Vedas. That way the Sampradaya started. It's like Lord Brahma imparted within the heart in this case. So this can happen in different ways in different days of Brahma. So it's not that the ideas are, but the explanations are contradictory or something. But from time to time, knowledge appears lost, the Kumaras establish them. Now, it's not in our particular day of Brahma. The Kumaras are firstborn sons of Brahma. And the reference in the third canto of Bhagavatam doesn't describe which day of Brahma, and as I mentioned yesterday evening, the chronology of the Bhagavatam is not sequential, it's not, nor does it have to be. It's giving us knowledge, and in an appropriate place something is mentioned. And it's challenging at times to stitch it all together. How does this part fit in with that chronologically? But far more important than the chronology is the Siddhanta. One other thing I'll just mention is in the last line of the purport, so I'm taking you to the conclusion before we start at the beginning, but the conclusion, Prabhupada writes, by following the footsteps of the four Kumaras, one can see at once the Supreme Personality of Godhead within himself. So when you think of the four Kumaras, what do you think of? One of the first things I think of is they're Shaktivesh avatars. They're bearing the Lord's Gyan Shakti. When there was discussion about Narada, the other day we were discussing Narada being the best of Brahma's sons. If Brahma had many direct sons, the Kumaras are among them, and they're bearing the potency of the Lord's Gyan Shakti. And Daksha is one of the direct sons of Brahma, and he is bearing the Lord's the portion, he is very absorbed in karmakanda. So karma manifested through Daksha, Gyan manifested through the four Kumaras, and Narada is also a Shaktivesh avatar bearing the Lord's Bhakti Shakti. And comparing Gyan, Karma, and Bhakti, Narada is the superlative, the best, by dint of his quality of devotion. And because of his quality of devotion, he had nice personal qualities. And because of those nice personal qualities and his quality of devotion, Brahma was very pleased and specifically trained him. And Narada specifically inquired from Brahma in relevant ways because of his disposition, having pleased Brahma very much. So when you think of the four Kumaras, they're in the list of incarnations, so they're incarnations, the first incarnations of the Lord. Now, sometimes, when hearing about the four Kumaras, we hear about strong emphasis on this Gyan side, but they're actually devotees. Sometimes when you hear about the four Kumaras, like in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, it's described that they're very fond of meditation. And we're very fond of devotion, as opposed to seeing the Lord in meditation. And I'll just share this with you briefly. In Brihat Bhagavatamrita, there's a description of Gopa Kumar, who's searching for Madan Gopal, because he received this Madan Gopal mantra from his guru in Vrindavan. And he travels literally all over the universe looking for Madan Gopal. You mentioned yesterday in that description of spiritual qualification that's necessary to be successful in spiritual life, and that's the eagerness to meet the Lord. Prayasa, remember that discussion? Mother Jasoda trying to bind Krishna, making great effort. Specifically is meeting the Lord, having our encounter with the Lord, having our very personal connection with the Lord. Very much needed. That quality. So Gopal Kumar had that quality. But he didn't know who Madan Gopal was. He didn't know where to find him. So he went looking all over for Madan Gopal. It's like, in one sense, it's the archetypical quest literature. You know, searching for something. Searching for Madan Gopal. So one of the places that he goes in his search is Tapaloka. And in the structure of the universe, Tapaloka is way up there. There are seven upper and seven lower planetary systems. The three that we know and very commonly hear about, at least in Gayatri Mantra, is Bhu, Bhuvar, and Svargalokas. And what's above Svargaloka is Maharloka. And Maharloka, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, Rabrihat Bhagavatamrita, is a place where perfected grihasthas go, and their program there is performance of yajna. They're completely disinterested in the material affairs of grihastha life, although they're grihasthas. And their focus is performance of yajna. There's so much into yajna that with the mood of detachment, material detachment, that while they're performing the yajnas, whenever they perform yajnas, and they're offering oblations into the fire, the Supreme Lord appears with outstretched hands and receives their oblations. They really like yajnas. Because as soon as the yajna is over, the Lord disappears. So they like lots, you know, practically non-stop yajna, as far as possible. So Gopal Kumar visits there, and the performers of yajna, they invite him, hey, come and join us. This is where it's really at. This is how to meet Madan Gopal. Just perform yajna. He does that for a while, appreciates experiencing that Supreme Lord, but somehow that Lord is just not the same as Madan Gopal, although he hasn't met Madan Gopal, it's just not the same. So then he hears from the residents in Maharloka about Tapaloka. And after hearing about Tapaloka, he goes to Tapaloka. And in Tapaloka, he finds everybody, at least initially, not talking to him because they're just sitting there in meditation. Now it's a hello, and they're not responding. And in Tapaloka, he finds the four Kumaras. And they're celibate because in Tapaloka, everybody, Maharloka is householders engaged in yajna, Tapaloka is lifelong celibates engaged in meditation primarily and discussion of philosophical topics. They take a little meditation break and discuss in very, very, very elevated ways. High, sophisticated, subtle points of philosophy, take a little prasad and go back and do their meditation. So we get the sense from reading Brihad Bhagavatamrita that the four Kumaras reside in Tapaloka, in this material world. like that's their home. But that's not their home, because later when he goes to Vaikuntha, he finds them in Vaikuntha and says, wait a minute, I saw you four back there. Now you're here. And the explanation is, oh, we go there just from time to time to try to encourage, like, you know, they do a little sankirtan. They go and give a little encouragement to the members of in Tapaloka. But actually, they're Vaikuntha residents. Like Nard is a Vaikuntha resident, although he travels all the time. That's his, you say, his home base, Vaikuntha. And the four Kumaras also, because they're transcendentalists. But in Tapaloka, they really like meditation. In fact, Pippalayana Rishi, there's a very large section where Pippalayana Rishi, being a meditation fan, is presenting all the reasons why one need not do anything other than meditation. You don't need to go looking for God, look for Mud and Gopal. Just meditate. It gives his reasons, the very interesting reasons. We don't agree with everything that Pippalayana Rishi said, because later there's a conversation with Gopal Kumar with the residents of Vaikuntha. Before he goes to Vaikuntha, he meets the residents of Vaikuntha, and they refer to the discussion with Pippalayana Rishi, where they specifically counter points made by Pippalayana Rishi why meditation is nice, but devotional service is superlative. Because devotional service incorporates points of meditation, but not just passive meditation, where in the mind you see the Supreme Lord. That's Pippalayana Rishi's argument. You're looking, you want to see Mud and Gopal, but it's only in the mind, or you first see in the mind before you see any other part of the, any other sensory organ. Without seeing in the mind, you can't see through the sensory organ. So why bother with looking for Mud and Gopal? Just meditate. He has that argument. And the superior, one of the superior arguments by the residents of Vaikuntha is that by devotional service you purify your senses and you can perceive the Lord through purified senses. And otherwise it's incomplete. The purification process is incomplete and the experience process is incomplete. And therefore the devotees desire millions of ears and millions of tongues, not just meditation, to glorify the Lord. It's service. Not just it's experience, but it's also service. And it's purification. So that's some of their argument. Devotional service is superior to a passive type of meditation. Now, back to the last sentence of the purport. Prabhupada writes, by following the footsteps of the four Kumaras, one can at once see the Supreme Personality of Godhead within himself. So that happens in Tapaloka. But what the Kumaras are teaching is the spiritual world. So seeing the Lord within oneself in the mood of devotion or through the medium of devotional service is what the Kumaras on the higher platform are teaching. And now I'm going to read the purport. Vishnu Sahasranam prayers mention the Lord's name as Sanat and Sanatanatama. The Lord and the living entities are both qualitatively Sanatana or eternal. But the Lord is Sanatana hyphen Tama or the eternal in the superlative degree, Sanatana Uttama, the topmost Sanatana. So like Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam, that verse, Sanatana Tama, He's the superlative Sanatana. Why is that? They're both Sanatana, but the living entities have a tendency to become covered, so they lose awareness of their eternal nature, and therefore inferior to the Supreme Lord, who never comes under the spell of the illusory energy. So he's giving, this is a dictionary definition of what does Sanatana mean. And the Lord is Sanatana Tama. Next paragraph. The word sun, S-A-N, is also used in the sense of charity. Sun is also used in the word in the sense of charity. Therefore, when everything is given up in charity unto the Lord reciprocates by giving himself unto the devotee. This is the bhaktavatsala feature of the personality of Godhead. Because the devotee gives himself completely to the Lord gives himself completely to the devotee. Charity. Moktaram yagatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suradam sarvabhutanam gyatamam shantim rishchati. When we make sacrifice or give in charity, the Lord's the bhokta. And Krishna consciousness means whenever we yad kuroshi, yad asnasi, yad jahosi, tadasi, yad tapasyasi kaunteya, tat kuroshi madarpanam. We may be acting on this plane, but our consciousness should be on this plane. When we give in charity, it should be when we're Krishna conscious, it's an act that's done for Krishna or unto Krishna. There may be someone else that's the recipient of that charity, but it's unto Krishna. Ideally, in Krishna consciousness. It's even, you know, like a little act of charitable gesture, whatever, something simple. Like giving in charity to a brahmana. The understanding is that's Vedic. It's when Krishna was placing an argument before Nanda Maharaj. You don't need to worship Indra. We're dependent upon the cows and the Brahmins and Govardhan Hill. Let's just worship. Take everything and worship the cows and the Brahmins and Govardhan Hill. So by worship of the Brahmanas, even better than worship of Krishna, as far as Krishna is concerned. The service to the devotee is even better than service to the Lord. Because the devotee is then immediately going to take everything and offer to the Lord. And it just increases, it expands the circle of loving dealings. Krishna likes that more than just trying to serve him. So, when we engage in acts of charity, it's unto the Supreme Lord. And when we surrender everything unto the Supreme Lord, then where does that quality of charitableness come from us? It's from the Supreme. He gives himself to his devotee. Very beautiful. It's worth repeating it and massaging it. And these topics, Prabhupada gives the example, or acharyas give the example, it's like sandalwood. When you're making sandalwood paste and you're rubbing, the more you rub, the more the fragrance comes out. So like that, taking the topics like this topic of the Lord being Bhakta Vatsala and His being charitable. He's the Supreme Lord. You know, He supplies everything for everybody. What to speak of charitable? There isn't anything that exists that hasn't come from the Lord. How charitable. Moreover, He gives Himself to His devotee because their disposition to Him. They give themselves completely to Him. He gives Himself completely to them. How charitable can you get? Confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Yeyatamam Prapadyante. Brahmaji wanted to create the whole cosmic manifestation as it was in the previous millennium, and because in the last devastation, knowledge of the Absolute Truth was altogether erased from the universe. He desired that the same knowledge again be renovated. Otherwise, there would be no meaning to the creation. Because transcendental knowledge is a prime necessity. The ever-conditioned souls are given a chance for liberation in every millennium of creation. The mission of Brahmaji was fulfilled by the grace of the Lord when these four sannas, chatu sannas, namely Sanaka, Sanat Kumar, Sanandana, and Sanatana, appeared as His four sons. These four sons, four sannas, were incarnations of the knowledge of the Supreme Lord, and as such they explained transcendental knowledge so explicitly that all the sages could at once assimilate this knowledge without the least difficulty. And then the last sentence, again, by following in the footsteps of the four Kumaras, one can at once see the Supreme Personality of Godhead within Himself. That's a curious way to end, considering the purpose of devotional service is not that of the process of meditation where we dhyan yoga. It's bhakti yoga. Similarly, in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, when Lord Kapiladeva is instructing Devahuti about the process of meditation. The process of meditation, he's not just teaching dhyana yoga, he's teaching bhakti yoga. It goes roughly like this. He teaches Sankhya, so to analyze the difference between matter and spirit. That's Sankhya. And then, process of meditation upon spirit. But when deeply absorbed in that meditation upon spirit, seeing the form of the Lord, and then in spiritual form, engaging in spiritual service to the spiritual form of the Lord in bhakti yoga. That's very elevated. Very elevated. But that's what Kapiladeva is teaching. Now, we require a different process. We require these sadhana practices of purifying externally our material senses by engaging them in practical activity. You recall that emphasis from the other day, practical activity. Budge. So that our senses become purified. And then, while going about doing what we do, we can perceive the spiritual dimension that's operating, it's driving the machine of the material energy while we're moving about. The machine of the material energy is moving about, but there's an animating force, an animating person behind, and a supreme person who is directing that animated person, us. We can realize the Supreme Lord through the medium of devotional service in our practical activity, to the degree that we become purified. And that's our objective. That's a high objective. It's far higher than getting a PhD. How many people have PhDs in this world? Lots of people. With that PhD, get some position teaching or some money. Lots of people have that. How many persons have God realization while they're doing their practical activities of life? That's a very high aspiration. And it's attainable. It's meant. I mean, the Bhagavatam is to give us the means of conquest, the means to do that. So we'll set a high goal for ourselves, even if we're way down here. But that's our goal. That's the goal defined right in the purport we just read. See the Supreme Lord within yourself while you go to the office. Do the things that you do. In stages, but that's our goal. Our stage might be, you know, to understand we're not this body and stop identifying with the mind. So much suffering is there in the mind. We need to withdraw. I was just discussing this before coming here with a very nice devotee couple. So much suffering unnecessary within the mind. Let's withdraw consciousness from asat. And the mind is like, you know, the screen which shows up all the spikes, what's going on in the mind. There's a happiness spike, here's an unhappiness spike. And the mind is just, you know, I feel this, I feel that. Having nothing to do with the self. It's just all what's out there, the world of duality. Happiness, distress, it's just reading the graph. Pleasure, pain, honor, dishonor, hot, cold, wet, dry, this, that, duality. And then we identify with duality. We're very busy identifying with duality. And it's incompatible with progressing in spiritual life. So we initially need to tolerate tongues to tiksha subharata, matra sparsha stukhamhya. Satoshna Sukha Dukadam. Agama Payonya, just tongues to tiksha subharata. Just don't identify with that program, the duality program. You invest consciousness in sat. So you like our sadhana, our devotional life, our internal devotional life. Loving exchanges with devotees, service to the Lord, chanting the holy name, hearing his message. Fixing our mind upon the personality of God and hearing his wonderful pastimes. Very nice. Hearing of his incarnations. Absorb our mind in sat. Absorb our consciousness in sat. Instead of duality. And cultivating. Then in course of time, that all that energy, it goes on, but our consciousness is absorbed elsewhere. When we visited the Bhajan Kutir of Raghunath Das Goswami at Radha Kund, there's a painting that has been reproduced by different artists in different ways, a painting of Raghunath Das absorbed in chanting. In one painting, there's two different episodes that are depicted, but they happened at separate times. One time, Raghunath Das was so absorbed in chanting that by the bank of Radha Kund, that while he was chanting, two tigers came and were drinking from the water. And because he's Sanatana Goswami, they, you know, super soul indicated to them, just leave them alone. They just went and drank water, and off in the distance you see Sanatan Goswami. Watching the scene, and you know, later Sanatan Goswami chastised Raghunath Das Goswami. What are you doing? The devotees are depending upon you, and here you are so absorbed in the holy name then your life is at risk. At least accept the bhajan kutir, you know, build yourself a little house so you have some protection. Yes, I will do. But he didn't do it. Because he was too absorbed in chanting the holy name. Then later, same sitting place, because there was a sitting place where he did his bhajan, in the middle of the summer in Vrindavan, scorching heat, but so absorbed, he didn't even notice it was scorching heat. No whining, complaining, hey, where's the fan? Too hot, let me out of here. He was just so absorbed in the holy name. Srimati Radharani came and held her shawl over him so that he could be in the shade. And Sanatan Goswami saw. And he didn't interrupt, but later he said, no, this is enough. We're to serve Radha, not to take service from Radha. This is terrible. You build the bhajan kutir. Right, right. So the nice painting. He's sitting there chanting next to two tigers and Radharani holding her upper garment over Sanatana Goswami's observing. Because Sanatana Goswami's bhajan kutir was from the other side of Radhakund, Shyamakund, one can see from one place, you can see the other place. So he was observing. This is taking service from Radharani. Shame on you. But he was absorbed. Absorbed. Consciousness. You know, the Eightfold Yoga system has as one of the angas is pratyahara. Pratyahara means withdrawing the senses from objects of the senses, like Bhishma Dev did, you know, from the first canto Bhagavatam. He withdrew it when the sun started moving to the north. He amalgamated his senses, withdrew his sense of pratyahara, just withdrew. But that's automatically achieved for one who is properly performing sadhana bhakti. It's an advanced stage, but so absorbed that what's going on out there, this consciousness is not being extended out there, it's being focused completely upon the Supreme Lord. So our process is the chanting of the holy name and the hearing and remembering and reciting of the messages of Godhead. By that method, the mind becomes fully concentrated upon the Supreme Lord. And then the roar of duality, it can go on all it likes. A raging wind blowing, and we're absorbed in Krishna. That's our transcendental position. Okay, any discussion? Specifically describes that in Bhagavad Gita in a purport. making of plans how to serve Krishna nicely. Specifically, he says how to spread the Krishna consciousness movement is the best way to fix the mind upon the personality of Godhead. So that's part of our devotional life. We shouldn't stop there. Making plans need to be executed. But our day-to-day things, we should see them in connection with, you know, the ultimate thing, pleasing Krishna. What we want is attachment to Krishna, not just do our day-to-day things. In the doing of the day-to-day things, consider how those day-to-day things connect to serving Krishna. If you think of the big picture, it's easier. You think of the moment, you get lost in the moment. Think of the big picture. Like, why are you here at this university? What does it have to do with service to Krishna? It does. But you have to look at the big picture to see it. There is a purpose in serving Krishna, doing what you're doing. And then the little parts are just part of that bigger picture. So let me do it nicely for Krishna. Then its attachment to Krishna grows. The same in anything. Entering into household life, what does that have to do with Krishna? There's a lot of entanglement. But there's purposes behind it. And if the purposes are understood and the purposes are served through each of the little things, then it's elevating. And otherwise it's degrading. It takes one's consciousness away. Or it can take one's consciousness too. Depending upon how we understand, you know, the bigger picture of what is Grihastha Ashram meant to do? What is and anything that we do in the world. Strength certainly comes from sadhana, but it's not we just borrow strength from sadhana and then everything is going to wash out clean. We have to be thoughtful about each of the things that we're doing, how it connects to Krishna. And gradually, that as attachment to Krishna grows, that becomes more clear. But it's not like mechanical or automatic. It's devotional. We're approaching our activities in a mood of devotion, of humble service, then becomes clear. And more clear, and more clear. Lives need to be principle centered, the principle of pleasing Krishna, serving Krishna, reaching into Krishna, attaining Krishna. And if it doesn't have anything to do with attaining Krishna, reject it. It does, assuming your directed activities in your pursuit of your career, academic career, has its serving Krishna purpose. Do it nicely for Krishna. How to develop which? Interest? See it in relation to the Lord. But simply put, so take this particular example. Brahma is describing from his perspective, but where does he get his perspective? His perspective is he has to do this creation service. But what's the use of the creation service without transcendental knowledge? So the Lord is thinking like that too. I mean, he permits that the knowledge disappears, but then he makes an arrangement with the Lord for knowledge to appear. So he manifest that knowledge within the four Kumaras. Just see how kind is the Lord. Flawlessly, lovingly, making very interesting arrangements for the living entity's welfare. And these personalities are bearing that potency of the Lord. So we respect them like we respect the Lord. Seeing in relation to the personality of Godhead. The hints are there, the clues are there, and then you follow that thread and you'll find the Lord. He's attracting our hearts and minds, and he's disclosing his nature, his loving nature. Speaking now, Tapaloka. These are yogis. You use the word devotees. They're yogis. And they're engaged in meditation. The reciprocation is they see the Lord. It's neutrality. It's passive. Devotion is active. The teaching from Lord Chaitanya begins from Dasya. And through the medium of Dasya, seeing is also there. But more. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada.